This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. 8 Supreme Court justices on Monday heard arguments in a seminal case on immigration. The case has been brought by 26 states, led by Texas, to gut 2 executive orders that President Obama signed. The orders in question are the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program, also known as DACA, and its subsequent Deferred Action for Parents of Americans Program, also known as DAPA. Republicans claim that the president does not have the authority to create the modest measure of temporary relief that the two programs offer to millions of undocumented immigrants. What no one counted on when this case began was the recent death of conservative Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Republicans who are leading the anti-immigrant charge are also blocking Obama's appointment of a new justice. Meanwhile, thousands of immigrants and their advocates gathered in front of the Supreme Court on Monday to urge justices to rule in favor of DACA and DAPA. My guest is Jessica Karp Bansal. She is the litigation director at the National Day Laborer Organizing Network. Welcome to Rising Up, Jessica.
Thank you, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. Now, we've had you on to talk about these issues before, but let's give our audience a refresher course about DACA and DAPA. DACA essentially applies to young undocumented immigrants, but they have to prove certain things. DAPA applies not to parents of immigrants, but to actually immigrant parents of citizens. Is that relatively accurate? And can you expand a little bit more on that?
Yes, that's right, Sonali. DACA is a program that has actually been in effect for a few years now. And what it does is allow young people who were brought here as children, who grew up in this country, went to high school or college here, and have no criminal record, it gives them temporary protection from deportation and allows them to work lawfully. DAPA, which never actually went into effect, is a program that would provide similar protections to parents of United States citizens and lawful permanent residents.
And so DACA, which was the first program that you mentioned, went into effect for a few years. Some immigrants around the country, hundreds of thousands actually, I understand, began to take advantage of the system. You basically have to let authorities know who you are in exchange for having your deportation deferred, but then you can sort of come out of the shadows. And it was sort of intended to be a temporary relief thing, but people hoped eventually it would be expanded. And then the Republicans began this case when DAPA was announced. What happened to DACA? Has it been now frozen?
No. So the DACA program has never been challenged in court. The sort of initial core program that you described, which allows children who grew up here to receive temporary protection from deportation and to work. The DAPA program that was enjoined did include an expansion of DACA, so it would have covered more people, including people who, quote unquote, have aged out of DACA. So there's some folks who grew up in this country and have lived here for so long that they're now too old to qualify for the DACA program. For example, people who've been here since they were 5, but now they're over 31, which was the age cutoff for DACA. They would have benefited from the new program that President Obama announced in 2014, but that program never went into effect.
I want to play for you and our audience Ken Paxton, who's the state attorney general in Texas. His justification, his sort of encapsulation of why the Republicans are attacking these executive orders. Following him, you'll hear Maria Elena Incapié of the National Immigration Law Center, on the steps of the Supreme Court, explaining how important these programs are for immigrants.
Our efforts to stop the president's illegal immigration plan go back to a fundamental principle, which is that one person doesn't have the unilateral authority to change the law or make new law. Today, our Solicitor General standing next to me argued the case strongly for the rule of law. If we allow a president, whether it's this president or a future president, no matter what their political persuasion or their party, to make changes in the law without congressional approval, then we will end up with a perverted constitution.
This morning, our communities, our families, we walked into the Supreme Court with so much hope. We are leaving confident. We know that the law is on our side. Supreme Court precedent is on our side, as many of the justices said, and we are on the right side of history and the law.
And that's Maria Elena Incapia of the National Immigration Law Center, joined by a number of other immigrants around her and their advocates, including Jose Antonio Vargas, the Pulitzer Prize-winning undocumented journalist. Before that, Ken Paxton, State Attorney General of Texas. And it was interesting. Let's focus on what Ken Paxton was saying, Jessica. It sounded like this state attorney general is in very, very concerned about federal presidential jurisdiction and the Congress, U.S. Congress, and their sort of rights and the rule of law, which is interesting because conservatives usually harp on about states' rights. He also was concerned about one person, meaning the president, regardless of party affiliation, taking these sorts of executive orders. What do you make of these arguments?
I think it's interesting, Sonali, because like you say, this isn't an issue that generally clearly trends right or left, the issue of executive authority. If you like the president and you want him to have authority, if you don't like the president, you don't. There's nothing inherently about executive authority that is a liberal or conservative issue. And I think the position that the states that have sued about this program have taken is in contrast, a clearly political one. They're not concerned about the extent of executive authority. They are against immigration, and they are concerned about immigrants who are in their states and who are already part of their communities and their economies. They're concerned that this program would allow them to come out of the shadows and would allow them to work lawfully and to sort of be a recognized part of the community rather than a shadow labor force that is available to be exploited. And I don't think that the concern is really executive authority. I think the issue is immigration.
And Paxton wrote a recent op-ed in USA Today with unbelievably superlative language. The title of the op-ed is Supreme Court Must Rebuke Obama's Self-Coronation. And the byline is, when one man can rewrite the law, that's the definition of tyranny. Wow. I mean, tyranny?
Yeah, I mean, so tyranny, you usually think of the government exercising its coercive power over individuals, right? And I think that DAPA is the exact opposite of that, because what you have is the government saying to individuals, we are not going to exercise our power to deport you because we recognize the reality of this situation. You are here. There are 11 million of you. Even Texas, even in court, is not arguing that President Obama must deport these people. What they are objecting to is giving them some measure of protection while they are here. And I think that's really an important distinction to make. So to frame this as tyranny seems pretty crazy. You don't think of tyrannical governments basically recognizing the humanity and civil rights of a minority population that has traditionally been exploited, which is what this program would do.
Right. And so the arguments that Paxton and others are making is that essentially this is legalization, that these immigrants, these undocumented immigrants, with the stroke of Obama's pen, were made legal, if you will. But that's not true. It simply defers deportation, right? And when you say protecting them from ICE raids, protecting them from being separated from their families, which is a huge fear. I mean, I can't imagine being separated from my husband and children.
Right. And that's an important distinction. And it's also traditionally clearly been within the executive's power to determine, both in the immigration context and in the criminal context, when to pursue deportation or when to pursue prosecution. As you said, this program would not allow anyone to get a green card. It would not allow anyone to become a citizen. It would simply recognize the reality that there are 11 million people here. Even the nativists in Congress have not allocated enough funds to deport these people, don't believe really that these people can be deported. And so the question is, are we going to maintain the status quo where these folks are here, they're part of our economy, they're part of our community, but their rights are easily trampled upon because they can't come out of the shadows, or are we going to give them a measure of dignity and respect?
So, Jessica, let's talk about what is going to happen now. When the case was brought forward, as I mentioned earlier, nobody could have predicted that the justices would be one short. Antonin Scalia's death has thrown a number of cases into disarray. It's not clear what will happen. The arguments were heard on Monday. I understand the decision is expected in the summer, but it's likely to be a 4-4 split, right? Is that the case? And if so, what does that mean?
Most observers of the argument did think coming out that it was likely there would be a 4-4 split. That's based on the questions the justices asked. So more or less, the justices who are more conservative leaning asked questions that were hostile of the attorney for the Obama administration, and the justices that are considered to be liberal leaning asked questions that were hostile towards the attorney for the state of Texas. It's still unclear. It still could come out either way, but a tie is possible. And the impact of a tie would be that the decision of the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which froze DAPA, which prevented DAPA from ever going into effect, that decision would stand in the event of a tie. The legal issue over whether President Obama had the authority to enact this program would remain unresolved at the national level. So there would be no binding precedent, but the injunction of the program would stand.
So from immigrants' perspective, the worst case scenario in the short term could be a 4-4 split, which means the lower court ruling could stand, which means that DAPA would essentially be stopped into going into effect, and the expansion of DACA, I'm assuming, as well.
Yes.
And so then, would the Supreme Court re-take up the issue of the president's authority if and when I should say, a ninth member of the court is appointed? Or does that have to come from a new case and that it would just be a done deal with a 4-4 split?
There would likely need to be a new case to raise the issue if there were a 4-4 split, but it's also likely that there would be a new case. There's a lot of sort of contingencies. The new president could change the program. A lot of things could happen. But a 4-4 split would leave considerable uncertainty.
So people gathered in front of the court on Monday, as I mentioned, there were hundreds, maybe thousands of people there. What were they hoping to, say? I mean, the Supreme Court is supposed to be above being influenced by people on the streets, but of course they're human beings. And often they do take a measure of popular understanding or popular wins on certain issues. Do you think that the gatherings, the activists, the immigrants and their advocates who protested and urged the Supreme Court to do the right thing will have any impact on the court?
I do. I think that their presence was especially essential because in this case, there's a sort of ironic situation where you have, on the one hand, the Obama administration, which is defending immigrants here, but which has an overall record of being responsible for the most deportations of any presidential administration in history. So overall, not your best friend of immigrants. And they're sort of having to defend themselves against an attack from the right, which are these states that say, President Obama, you've deported more people than any other president, but it's not enough. We're going to sue you for using too much discretion not to deport people. It's sort of sad to watch the debate play out in that way. And so I think the presence of the actual people who are affected by the decision outside the court is essential to remind people that President Obama and the state of Texas are not the only two voices on immigration in this country. There are the voices of families who, as you mentioned, may have been separated from their children, from their parents, who are suffering and who still get up every day and go to work and contribute to this country. And so I think their presence is essential. And I think, as you said, even though the justices in many ways are insulated from public opinion, they can't fail to notice that the people who are going to be affected by their decision were out there making themselves heard.
Right. And also, speaking of President Obama, of course, we should put into context that he hasn't exactly been the most immigrant-friendly president, being distinguished by having overseen the most deportations of any president in U.S. History, as far as I know, so earning the moniker Deporter-in-Chief, and also playing this very bizarre game, policy game, with the Republicans during his entire tenure, that if he were to simply be just as hard on enforcement as Republicans, that they would then feel appeased and give in on reforms in another direction on immigration. All that's done is hand more power over to Republicans, and they've just dug their heels in and not even acknowledged that he's actually been as anti-immigrant as they have on enforcement.
I think that's exactly right, Sonali. And I think is important for the president to understand that DAPA is not the only issue that matters in immigration. So he had this sort of ill-advised strategy of creating space for programs like DAPA, programs that would help immigrants, by, as you mentioned, ramping up enforcement against other groups of immigrants. That strategy has failed. It's been obvious for years now that the strategy has failed. He's not winning over any Republicans, but he continues the strategy. And so while his attorneys were in court on Monday defending DAPA, ICE agents were on the ground in Latino communities throughout the country arresting refugee families and placing them in deportation proceedings. That has to stop. If President Obama wants to be remembered for anything near a positive legacy on immigration, he has to do more than DAPA. He's going to have to end the programs that he's created that have really, over the past 8 years, terrorized the immigrant community by ramping up deportations and creating an enforcement machinery on the ground that spreads fear and that separates families.
And he has 8 months left to do anything, if you will, to revive or, you know, to sort of patch up his tenure, his legacy on immigration. Jessica, give out a website for your organization, NDLON, National Day Labor Organizing Network.
Yes, it's www.ndlon.org.
And we'll post a link to that later today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest is Jessica Karp Bansal. She is a litigation director at NDLON, the National Day Labor Organizing Network. This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.